Chapter 5. Only an occasional glimpse of the forget-me-not bonnet and the clockmaker's shiny coat collar, but when the little party got out at their corner, the crowd swept them together again, and they walked back in the effortless silence of tired children to the Bunner sisters' basement. As Miss Mellons and Mr. Ramey turned to go their various ways, Evelina mustered a last display of smiles. But Annalisa crossed the threshold in silence, feeling the stillness of the little shop reach out to her like consoling arms. That night she could not sleep, but as she lay cold and rigid at her sister's side, she suddenly felt the pressure of Evelina's arms, and heard her whisper, "Colin, oh, Annalisa, weren't it heavenly?" Why, for 4 days after their Sunday in the park, the Bunner sisters had no news of Mr. Ramey. At first neither one betrayed her disappointment and anxiety to the other, but on the fifth morning Evelina, always the first to yield to her feelings, said, as she turned from her untasted tea, "Colin, I thought you'd oughter take that money out by now, Annalisa." Annalisa understood and reddened. The winter had been a fairly prosperous one for the sisters, and their slowly accumulated savings had now reached the handsome sum of $200. But the satisfaction they might have felt in this unwonted opulence had been clouded by a suggestion of Miss Mellon's that there were dark rumors concerning the savings bank in which their funds were deposited. They knew Miss Mellon's was given to vain alarms, but her words, by the sheer force of repetition, had so shaken Annalisa's peace that after long hours of midnight counsel the sisters had decided to advise with Mr. Ramey. And on Annalisa, as the head of the house, this duty had devolved. Mr. Ramey, when consulted, had not only confirmed the dressmaker's report, but had offered to find some safe investment which should give the sisters a higher rate of interest than the suspected savings bank, and Annalisa knew that Evelina alluded to the suggested transfer. "Why, yes, to be sure," she agreed. Mr. Ramey said, if he was us he wouldn't want to leave his money there any longer he could help. It was over a week ago he said it, Evelina reminded her. I know, but he told me to wait till he'd found out for sure about that other investment, and we ain't seen him since then. Annalisa's words released their secret fear. Wonder what's happened to him, Evelina said. Who don't suppose he could be sick? I was wondering too, Annalisa rejoined, and the sisters looked down at their plates. I should think you'd oughter do something about that money pretty soon, Evelina began again. Well, I know I'd oughter. What would you do, if you was me? If I was you, said her sister, with perceptible emphasis and a rising blush, I'd go right round, and see if Mr. Ramey was sick. You could. The words pierced Annalisa like a blade. Yes, that's so, she said. It would only seem friendly, if he really is sick. If I was you I'd go today, Evelina continued. And after dinner Annalisa went. On the way as he had to leave a parcel at the dyer's, and having performed that errand she turned toward Mr. Ramey's shop. Never before had she felt so old, so hopeless and humble. She knew she was bound on a love errand of Evelina's, and the knowledge seemed to dry the last drop of young blood in her veins. It took from her, too, all her faded virginal shyness, and with a brisk composure she turned the handle of the clockmaker's door. But as she entered her heart began to tremble, for she saw Mr. Ramey, his face hidden in his hands, sitting behind the counter in an attitude of strange dejection. At the click of the latch he looked up slowly, fixing a lusterless stare on Annalisa. For a moment she thought he did not know her. "Oh, you're sick," she exclaimed, and the sound of her voice seemed to recall his wandering senses. "Why, if it ain't Miss Bunner," he said, in a low thick tone, but he made no attempt to move, and she noticed that his face was the color of yellow ashes. "You are sick," she persisted, emboldened by his evident need of help. "Mr. Ramey, it was real unfriendly of you not to let us know." He continued to look at her with dull eyes. "Ain't been sick," he said. "Eastways not very. Only one of my old turns." He spoke in a slow, labored way, as if he had difficulty in getting his words together. "Rheumatism?" she ventured, seeing how unwillingly he seemed to move. Well, something like, maybe. I couldn't hardly put a name to it. If it was anything like rheumatism, my grandmother used to make a tea and lisabegan. As he had forgotten, in the warmth of the moment, that as he had only come as Evelina's messenger. At the mention of tea, an expression of uncontrollable repugnance passed over Mr. Ramey's face. H, I guess I'm getting on all right. I've just got a headache today. Aunt Liz's courage dropped at the note of refusal in his voice. I'm sorry, she said gently. Why, sister and me'd have been glad to do anything we could for you. Thank you kindly, said Mr. Ramey wearily. Then, as she turned to the door, he added with an effort, colon, maybe I'll step round tomorrow. We'll be real glad, Aunt Liza repeated. Her eyes were fixed on a moldy bronze clock in the window. She was unaware of looking at it at the time, but long afterward she remembered that it represented a Newfoundland dog with his paw on an open book. When she reached home, there was a purchaser in the shop, turning over hooks and eyes under Evelina's absent-minded supervision. Aunt Liza passed hastily into the back room, but in an instant she heard her sister at her side. Quick! I told her I was going to look for some smaller hooks. How is he? Evelina gasped. He ain't been very well, said Aunt Liza slowly, her eyes on Evelina's eager face. But he says he'll be sure to be round tomorrow night. He will? Are you telling me the truth? Why, Evelina Bunner. Oh, I don't care, cried the younger recklessly, rushing back into the shop. Aunt Liza stood burning with the shame of Evelina's self-exposure. She was shocked that, even to her, Evelina should lay bare the nakedness of her emotion, and she tried to turn her thoughts from it, as though its recollection made her a sharer in her sister's debasement. The next evening, Mr. Ramey reappeared, still somewhat sallow and red-lidded, but otherwise his usual self. Aunt Liza consulted him about the investment he had recommended, and after it had been settled that he should attend to the matter for her, he took up the illustrated volume of Longfellow for, as the sisters had learned, his culture soared beyond the newspapers and read aloud, with a fine confusion of consonants, the poem on Aidenhood. Evelina lowered her lids while he read. It was a very beautiful evening, and Aunt Liza thought afterward how different life might have been with a companion who read poetry like Mr. Ramey. During the ensuing weeks, Mr. Ramey, though his visits were as frequent as ever, did not seem to regain his usual spirits. He complained frequently of headache, but rejected Aunt Liza's tentatively proffered remedies, and seemed to shrink from any prolonged investigation of his symptoms. July had come, with a sudden ardor of heat, and one evening, as the three sat together by the open window in the back room, Evelina said, colon, I dunno what I wouldn't give, a night like this, for a breath of real country air. So would I, said Mr. Ramey, knocking the ashes from his pipe. I'd like to be sitting in Ann Arbor this very minute. Oh, wouldn't it be lovely? I always think it's real cool here. We'd be heaps hotter up where Miss Mellon's is, said Aunt Liza. Oh, I dare say, but we'd be heaps cooler somewhere else, her sister snapped. She was not infrequently exasperated by Aunt Liza's furtive attempts to mollify Providence. A few days later, Mr. Ramey appeared with a suggestion which enchanted Evelina. He had gone the day before to see his friend, Mrs. Hodgmiller, who lived in the outskirts of Hoboken, and Mrs. Hodgmiller had proposed that on the following Sunday he should bring the Bunner sisters to spend the day with her. She's got a real garden, you know, Mr. Ramey explained, with trees and a real summer house to set in, and hens and chickens too. And it's an elegant sail over on the ferry boat. The proposal drew no response from Aunt Liza. She was still oppressed by the recollection of her interminable Sunday in the park, but, obedient to Evelina's imperious glance, she finally faltered out an acceptance. The Sunday was a very hot one, and once on the ferry boat, Aunt Liza revived at the touch of the salt breeze and the spectacle of the crowded waters. But when they reached the other shore and stepped out on the dirty wharf, She began to ache with anticipated weariness. They got into a streetcar, and were jolted from one mean street to another, till at length Mr. Ramey pulled the conductor's sleeve, and they got out again. Then they stood in the blazing sun, near the door of a crowded beer saloon, waiting for another car to come, and that carried them out to a thinly settled district, past vacant lots and narrow brick houses standing in unsupported solitude, till they finally reached an almost rural region of scattered cottages and low wooden buildings that looked like village tours. Here the car finally stopped of its own accord, and they walked along a rutty road, past a stone cutter's yard with a high fence tapestried with theatrical advertisements, to a little red house with green blinds and a garden paling. Really, Mr. Ramey had not deceived them. Clumps of dailitra and daylilies bloomed behind the paling, and a crooked elm hung romantically over the gable of the house. At the gate, Mrs. Hodgmiller, a broad woman in brick brown merino, met them with nods and smiles, while her daughter Linda, a flaxen-haired girl with mottled red cheeks and a sidelong stare, hovered inquisitively behind her. Mrs. Hodgmiller, leading the way into the house, conducted the Bunner sisters the way to her bedroom. Here they were invited to spread out on a mountainous white feather bed the cashmere mantles under which the solemnity of the occasion had compelled them to swelter, and when they had given their black silks the necessary twitch of readjustment, and Evelina had fluffed out her hair before a looking glass framed in pink shell work, their hostess led them to a stuffy parlor smelling of gingerbread. After another ceremonial pause, broken by polite inquiries and shy ejaculations, they were shown into the kitchen, where the table was already spread with strange-looking spice cakes and stewed fruits, and where they presently found themselves seated between Mrs. Hodgmiller and Mr. Ramey, while the staring Linda bumped back and forth from the stove with steaming dishes. To Ann Eliza the dinner seemed endless, and the rich fare strangely unappetizing. She was abashed by the easy intimacy of her hostess's voice and eye. With Mr. Ramey, Mrs. Hodgmiller was almost flippantly familiar, and it was only when Ann Eliza pictured her generous form bent above his sick bed that she could forgive her for tersely addressing him as Amy. During one of the pauses of the meal, Mrs. Hodgmiller laid her knife and fork against the edges of her plate, and, fixing her eyes on the clockmaker's face, said accusingly, "Colin, you had one of them turns again, Ramey." "I dunno as I had," he returned evasively. Evelina glanced from one to the other. "Mr. Ramey has been sick," she said at length, as though to show that she also was in a position to speak with authority. "He's complained very frequently of headaches." "Oh, I know him," said Mrs. Hodgmiller with a laugh, her eyes still on the clockmaker. "Ain't you ashamed of yourself, Ramey?" Mr. Ramey, who was looking at his plate, said suddenly one word which the sisters could not understand. It sounded to Ann Eliza like "wike." Mrs. Hodgmiller laughed again. "Why, my," she said, "wouldn't you think he'd be ashamed to go and be sick and never tell me that nursed him through that awful fever?" "Yes, I should," said Evelina, with a spirited glance at Ramey, but he was looking at the sausages that Linda had just put on the table. When dinner was over, Mrs. Hodgmiller invited her guests to step out of the kitchen door, and they found themselves in a green enclosure, half garden, half orchard. Gray hens followed by golden broods clucked under the twisted apple boughs, a cat dozed on the edge of an old well, and from tree to tree ran the network of clothesline that denoted Mrs. Hodgmiller's calling. Beyond the apple trees stood a yellow summer house festooned with scarlet runners, and below it, on the farther side of a rough fence, the land dipped down, holding a bit of woodland in its hollow. It was all strangely sweet and still on that hot Sunday afternoon, and as she moved across the grass under the apple boughs, Ann Eliza thought of quiet afternoons in church, and of the hymns her mother had sung to her when she was a baby. Evelina was more restless. She wandered from the well to the summer house and back, she tossed crumbs to the chickens, and disturbed the cat with arch caresses, and at last she expressed a desire to go down into the wood. I guess you got to go round by the road, then, said Mrs. Hotchmiller. Why, Linda, she goes through a hole in the fence, but I guess you'd tear your dress if it was too dry. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.